The pandemic emergency, in a narrow way, has been declared over. For the past 3 years, the country has been under a declared national emergency, and the president just signed a resolution to end that. We should say, at the risk of confusion, that a separate public health emergency is still on the books. So to clarify and talk about what this means practically speaking, we have Dan Diamond. He's national health reporter at the Washington Post. Dan, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
So the status of national emergency created public health programs to help Americans, some programs to help with mortgage payments, healthcare benefits. So what is ending now that this national emergency is declared over?
It's a good question, especially because these emergencies are often conflated in the minds of listeners and even some media coverage. The national emergency, that's the one that President Trump declared 3 years ago, the one that President Biden just ended. It's important procedurally. It's also symbolically important. Your listeners might remember when President Trump gave his Oval Office speech in March 2020, the night actor Tom Hanks tested positive for COVID, the NBA season shut down, then a few days later declared the national emergency. So that one did allow for mortgage payments to be delayed. There were some ripple effects for telehealth. If you were a Medicare beneficiary, a senior who wanted to connect with your doctor via a Zoom app, you could do that. But most of the flexibility, most of the changes were actually in a public health emergency declared by the HHS secretary, the health secretary, about a month and a half earlier. And that emergency we are still going to be living with for another month yet.
Okay. So as far as mortgage payments, a lot of us were using this word forbearance. You can put off some payments. Is that program ending?
Well, you're asking a health reporter to go deep on housing policy, which is like asking a quarterback to hit a home run. But no, I will say that program has been that program has been delayed until the end of May for ending. It had been kicked back a few times previously. Okay. Many Americans did take advantage of that program, but Scott, the evidence is that more Americans are now paying their mortgages than at the height of the COVID pandemic. It's probably going to end permanently in May.
And how about the telemedicine provisions?
Those have been kicked down the pike to the end of 2024. It's probably helpful for your listeners to know there are hundreds of flexibilities that were baked into the public health emergency. There are millions of Americans who got covered by Medicaid, the safety net health program. It differs a little bit state to state, but mostly this is for low-income Americans, mothers, children. During the public health emergency, states have not been able to disenroll these Americans. If their income went up, if they forgot to fill out some paperwork, before the pandemic, they lose coverage. But during the public health emergency, they've kept that coverage. That process is beginning to unwind. So that is a very big deal and will have lots of ripple effects. And then there are other policies too. Testing around COVID, vaccines for COVID. Folks are still trying to figure out what of these flexibilities will stay on after the emergency and what needs to be changed in law to help patients keep enjoying these things.
Dan, let me ask you a little bit more about Medicaid and this program of continuous enrollment, which allowed a lot of people to stay on the program and keep those healthcare benefits. Will there be people who now lose those benefits?
Unfortunately, yes, Scott. We know that from previous periods when Medicaid did these disenrollment processes, people lost coverage, didn't realize it, became uninsured, and then had real trouble getting back on the program. Medicaid currently covers about 90 million Americans, 20 million who gained coverage during the pandemic. It is thought that as many as 15 million Americans may lose coverage because of this disenrollment in the coming months.
Yeah, okay. Of course, the virus itself doesn't care a whit about public declarations. We are still seeing more than 200 COVID deaths a day in this country. Who is getting sick? Who is dying?
It's often immunocompromised people, elderly people, but not always. I spoke to an infectious disease physician in Massachusetts last week. She described seeing a very serious case of COVID in a healthy person in their 30s. There's a chance, Scott, that 100,000 Americans could die this year from COVID, which would make it, again, one of the top causes of death, even 3 years into the pandemic.
Yeah, wow. And we're seeing this current strain, which, for many people is makes them less sick, but there's no guarantee we're going to stay on the strain, right?
Well, the current strain of COVID, one reason it seems that people are less affected generally is many of us have been infected or we've been vaccinated. So we do have more protections, but there is fear that the next strain, the next variant, could be that much worse.
Dan Diamond of the Washington Post, thank you.
Thank you, Scott.